Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net, for 43-plus years. It's been going on every Sunday night, and we get together about 8 o'clock every Sunday night, sit in front of our radios, and entertain each other, and inform each other, and learn from each other, and hopefully have a good time. So once again, I thank you all for coming back this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Let me drop, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you need to reach me, you could do it via the radio, or else, failing that, you could do it via email. The reasons for reaching me would be either what we used to call mailbag questions. If you can't get on the repeater Sunday night at 8 p.m., you could email me a question. We can discuss it, and you can either listen to the audio stream that we provide live or listen to an archive of this technical net later on in the week. Other possibilities is something's come up in the news and you are a fan of the technology and you'd like to share your expertise. So if you'd like to do a short presentation on some technology that's in the news, or if you'd like to be part of a discussion of the technology, or even if you would like other people to discuss it and you'd like to sit back and listen. So that might be a reason to email me. Also, we're always looking for TechNet puzzles. These are kind of mind exciters, give us an opportunity to discourse on things and remember stuff that we used to know but don't quite remember anymore. And, they're questions that hopefully shouldn't be answerable by doing a simple Google search. As a matter of fact, some of my best puzzles were you Google it and you get the wrong answer. So I particularly enjoy those. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder for some NASA or space-related story and get his opinion of it. Of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if you would like to contact me, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. We also maintain a link page of interesting videos and articles and all kinds of fun stuff. Throughout the previous week, I cut and paste a bunch of things, collect them up, and then I publish them on my link page. You just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you the links to articles and videos and all kinds of interesting things. And there are some visuals that probably it would be nice if you could kind of look at before I start the net, because I'm going to talk a little bit about the new LK99 superconductor at room temperature, and there are some images that might be useful to explain things. Let me drop for a sec. We have a chat room available. It's been rather quiet this summer, but, sometimes it gets rather lively. You can access it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll lead you to the chat room. As I mentioned before, we offer an audio stream through the internet of the technical net, and the rest of the week I send the feed from Glen Oaks repeater through it. So if you don't have access to a radio, but you do have access to an internet provider, then you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you a real-time audio stream of the repeater. And also, I like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has an archive site where he archives these technical nets. It's called amateurradio.tv. And he's been holding on to archives of the technical net since September of 2006. So a lot of wisdom has been recorded, and you can listen to it any old time that you want. That said, let's drop again, and then I'll come back and tell you the plans for tonight. Well, usually what we do is we ask for questions of a technical nature. We prefer the early questions to be amateur radio related. As time goes on, we accept any science and technology related questions or comments or topics for discussion, but I would like the first few, if possible, to be amateur radio related. That should take us to about 10:15. Then Paul, WS2N, will present the SpaceNet report until about 11 p.m. I'll return and tie a little bow on it and wish you well. So that's the idea. If all the things in the chain, my radio, the repeater, the universe, works the way it's supposed to. But tonight, as a slight difference, I just want to mention a couple of topics at the top of the technical net. So we'll take questions and comments and topics after I do this little portion. So I'll drop and move into the free stream of thought type of portion of the early net. Okay, first something that I had planned to discuss last week, but never got around to it. You people out there who are ARRL members, some of you no doubt know, but some of you may not read your email. They've decided to increase the subscription rate. Most of us pay $49 a year and receive the QST magazine in the mail. They decided to kick membership from $49 to $59, and they no longer send you the magazine in the mail. If you want to, you can read it off of the Internet. They have a website that you can summon up a copy of the magazine and read it on screen, but they do not send you the magazine unless you pay an additional charge of $25. So effectively, you know, we're talking about it going from $49 to almost to about $84. So that's a heck of an upchuck. So that'll be effective, I believe, January 2024. So the next time that you renew your license, expect it to cost a significantly larger amount of money. Any comments before I move on to my second topic?
W2BUS1.
Yes, I heard Rich and Paul. I heard Rich first, so you go first, Rich.
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. You know, just when ham radio operators are aging like myself, you know, to the point of extinction, I think it's a pretty stupid time to raise prices. I think they should go the other way and lower the prices, because if you want to bring young people in, you got to make it affordable. So I think it's a very, very stupid move on their part. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, that's an interesting opinion. I think at one time or another there were student discounts. I'm not quite sure. I don't remember reading anything about student discounts with this plan, but I certainly would agree with you that they probably should make it less expensive for younger hams starting off. You know, maybe us old-timers might be able to afford an extra couple of bucks. I think it was a big kick. You know, going 30% up. That's really, really significant. And my guess is if you call them on it, they'll say, well, you don't have to get the magazine. You could read the magazine on your computer. But I think a lot of old timers are much happier reading paper and ink magazines rather than reading it off of a bright screen. I mean, bright screens are great for web browsing and such. But, you know, reading 80, 90, 100 pages of a magazine can get a little tiresome. Paul, you wanted to say something.
Hey, Joe, with a comment as well.
Okay, John recognized. Paul?
Okay, Roy, I missed the cost of the QST per month. You said something on that. And then I have one other comment about this.
Yeah, the plan is if you want the monthly issues mailed to you, it's an additional $25 a year.
82 AMZ.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that, and I was looking for that. So thanks for that. Good to know. The other thing is, like, for instance, I have every QST since I started, since mid-1980s. And I guess the only good thing about this is I'm running out of room on my shelf, so I think paying $25 extra is kind of ridiculous. So that'll be the end of the paper QSTs for me. That's for sure. The other comment though is now if I want to save these QSTs that come in, what do I do? I save it to my Google Drive, or do I have to go to the ARRL site if I want to go back, let's say 3 or 4 years, 3 or 4 years from now, I want to go back 2 years, what do I got to go to the ARRL site to bring up a QST, or am I going to be able to save it? Do you know anything about that, Roy?
KD2AMZ.
Yes, Mike recognized. John is goes after Paul, and then I'll call on you, Mike. Getting that back to you, Paul, as far as I'm aware, the way that the ARRL handles it now and will probably continue is that as long as you are a member of the ARRL, you have access to their website, and you can summon a copy of any issue from the first one to the last one. I do not think you are able to download copies directly from your computer. There are iOS apps that let you download it onto the application, but I'm not exactly sure if you could then move that that stored information into a usable form outside of your iPad. So I guess the way to look at it most likely is as long as you maintain your membership, you have access to a reading copy, although I don't think you could download the print. You can grab a page or two if you're capable of doing that, and I've done that in the past, but I don't think there's access to simply download, say, a PDF of the entire issue.
Okay, that sounds bad, because sometimes you want to look back at an advertisement, not necessarily a product review that they might have done. Some, you look through some of these advertisements. It's amazing you pick up something from 10 years ago or more. You look through the advertisements that they have, and some of the companies are gone or almost gone. They changed hands, and it's kind of fun to look through that. And I think that's going to be not doable in the future if you can't read the actual book that came out at the time. Okay, the other station was in there. Very good. Thanks for the info, Roy. Back to you.
Well, you're welcome, Paul. And usually they present it as page after page, so you can either go to the table of contents and go to a particular page, or you can just rifle from one end to the other end. And so you can see advertisements in QSTs 50 years ago on the copies. They as they go farther and farther back in time, the copies are more grungy, so the reproductions are more noisy, if you will. But they're all available. You just have to be able to log into the website, and then you just do a search for QST, and then you can pick an author, you can pick a year and a month, you can pick a lot of different things. It's a little bit better than it was, say, 10 years ago when I first saw it. It's just another way that time is passing. Even 10 years ago, there were people who said, why are you printing out magazines? Magazines are going the way of the dodo, just leave it on a website. And so they were very strong about keeping it in print, but I guess not so much these days.
Okay, very good. I was upset when they did away with the call book. The big book was like as thick as a telephone book. You could look up people's call letters. Every now and then you buy another one of them, and now it's all online. But, some of the stuff I have, I guess you could put in a ham radio museum. Back to you.
Yes, indeed. Time marches on, and I assume that if they could have made a profit off of it, they probably would continue with it. But I guess someone who adds up the numbers for them decided that it wouldn't have made a significant enough profit to warrant it. John, you're next. You wanted to say something?
Guys can hear me okay. I'm hitting my nose on my handheld at the moment at the recycling center, but you just answered all of my questions, so thank you. KC2SHO. Back to you now.
AC2GS. Well, I'm glad I read your mind, John. Mike, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I did. KD2AMZ. Well, I'm sorry to inform everybody out there, welcome to the 21st century. Remember, magazines and printed media are incredibly expensive to produce and mail. They all mostly end up in a landfill. You can't recycle glossy paper. So, quite frankly, I'm not happy about it, but it's a good thing. This is just the way it goes. Like, how many newspapers do you see out there these days? Again, like you said, this is the way of the dodo bird. I'm sorry, but I read my QST on my tablet. And yes, you can store them in your tablet. There's you get the app, and yes, you can read them. And yes, you can refer and read every QST you want. It's really just pick it and go. It's all right there. What can I tell you guys? I'm sorry, but Way of the dodo bird.
KB2RSQ.
Yes, RSQ.
Hey, this name here is Pete. They're just checking in. I'm in Stony Brook. Just curious.
Yes, Pete, do you have any comment or you just wanted to check in tonight?
Say something. He was going to say, just curious, but then we lost him.
Oh, okay. It's a shame. Well, Pete, if you're out there, you know where to find us, and glad to have you with us. I understand Mike's attitude. And, you know, I'm a tech guy. I really like the bleeding edge. Sometimes I've bled a great deal in time and effort and money jumping on the latest, greatest stuff. But, you know, what can I tell you? Maybe I'm just an old codger. I like hardcover books. I like the smell of books. I like newspapers. I like magazines. I try to subscribe to as many magazines as I can to keep them alive. I saw Popular Science die on me. I saw a lot of magazines go quarterly and then cease to publish and have a presence on a web page. I look forward to my monthly Scientific American magazine. I could read it online, but again, I there are some things that I just like to do the old-fashioned way, and I understand that time marches on. I just think that they're asking a bit too much, that they should have done this in maybe more gradual steps, but it's not. I missed my opportunity to make my comment, but I don't think if I made my comment, they would really change their mind one way or the other. So I just thought it was an interesting thing to mention. I was going to do it, like I said, last week, but I totally forgot. Any other comments before we move on to my next little early topic before questions?
WB2KWC.
Yes, Ken.
Okay, I think that a dues increase is inevitable. I mean, from what I had read, I think the last dues increase was like 8 years ago. My opinion is that it's a little bit too much at one time, but the fact that dues are going up, just like everything else, prices are increasing, and unfortunately, we've got to bear with it. Perhaps they should guarantee that for the length of your membership, your dues will remain constant or at a discounted rate, and you could commit for as many years as you wanted, and that would keep your dues at a constant level until that subscription ran out. AC2GS, WB2KW3.
Well, I agree with you, Ken. Unfortunately, they seem to be taking the opposite tack. They made a point of saying that anyone thinking of taking a lifetime membership, don't send in your check quite yet because they're sitting around trying to figure out how to deal with it. They don't want anyone sneaking in the low price of the previous subscription. I don't disagree with you. It's reasonable. Inflation is a thing. I don't know if you regularly checked your magazines, but there was one issue where the paper stock was really awful. It was very thin. It was very fragile. You could see the ink on the other side of the page. And being me, I emailed them and said, what the heck? And they said, yeah, the paper supply people have been screwing up our order, and we're trying the best that we can, and we plan to go back to a similar quality paper stock, and it was just one accident, and it won't happen again. So I understand. I'm sure the paper costs more, and the printing costs more, and everything costs more. But, you know, last time they went, I think, from $39 a year to $49 a year, which is fine. If they went up to from 49 to 59 and that's it, I'd say fine as well. It's that 59 plus the $25 for the actual magazine. I don't know. Unless paper prices have really gone up, I think that's close to usury. But that's just my opinion.
Enter TVH Mobile.
Yes.
Well, you know, like everybody said, everything is going up, and as fewer and fewer magazines get published, the places that publish them are just going to charge more. It's the law of supply and demand. It's going to go up, $25, you said?
Well, they brought up the subscription 10, and then for the magazine, it's 25. So it's a kick up of $35 next year.
To put things in perspective, on my way to work, just stopping at Dunkin' Donuts, I'll spend that much money in coffee and a roll in 1 month. And I think that's the way you got to look at it. I mean, you don't realize it, but just buying morning coffee, you know, like 5 days a week, you're going to spend that much every month.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it like that, but I mean, then, you know, every time someone raises the price on something, I guess you could do the same thing, and before you know it, it's costing thousands and thousands of dollars more a month. I don't mind if it's to cover costs and a little bit extra. I don't know the economics of the ARRL, so I don't know if it really warrants a $35 kick-up. I do know that lately during our inflation period, more than a few businesses fessed up that the cost of doing business didn't really go up for them, but they took inflation as an opportunity to cash in. So there are some guys out there that are just cashing in for the sake of making a bigger profit. Again, we live in a capitalist world, so this is going to happen. The only thing the consumer really can do is decide, thank you, no thank you. I think there's going to be some people who drop their club membership. Some people love being part of the ARRL. I do, but, you know, they're going to reach a point where they're going to lose some members. It hopefully will be made up for by the additional payment of the other people who stick around. I don't know. It's economics, which is always a dubious science. So I don't know whether this was a brilliant move. I would have probably liked something in the middle, you know, something like $10 increase in subscription and $10 or $15 for the printed magazine. But again, they made their decision.
Well, I think there's a big, you know, the last time they had a major raise was 7 years ago. So you're just seeing the pent-up inflationary costs. And as far as, you know, whether they want to or they need to, it looks like this is all about survival. Either they charge this amount or they don't provide the magazine and everybody can get the digital edition. You know, I just prefer the paper edition, and to me it's still, you know, if it goes up another $25, it's still worth it to me. But I'm not everybody, and everybody's not me. But I understand that from reading their editorials and everything, it's either they had to do this, they're not looking to make a profit, and it was either do it or nobody gets it.
Okay. Again, I've never looked into their books. I don't know how much of a cushion for future inflation they've built into this. My guess would be that this is not the price point to keep zero loss today or next week. I assume they've built in a healthy cushion so that if inflation continues for the next 8 years, they're still breaking even. So that tends to mean that right now they're making a profit, even though, you know, it's not a profitable organization. So, again, it's just a bunch of guys complaining or accepting. Whatever happens will happen. I've been a member of the ARRL since I got my license. I know a lot of longtime hams that had belonged to the ARRL years ago, but now don't really think one way or the other about them. And occasionally they'll have a friend who gets QST, and they'll hand over their old copies and they'll read them and enjoy them and save money. So, you know, we'll see how successful this is over the long term. Okay, so I took the opportunity to gripe about paying more. I also belong to the Radio Society of Great Britain, and it costs even more to get a membership and a subscription to their magazine. I think it's something like 85 or 87 pounds, which is something like $90. So, yeah, things are getting expensive. Anyway, second item I want to discuss is we talked about it a little last week. It was an announcement from South Korean researchers for a room temperature superconductor that they have labeled LK99. The two scientists who started research, it's grown to more than five, but the first two, their names began with L and K, and they started tinkering with this material back in 1999. So that's why they call it LK99. They've been tinkering for 23 years, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they shoot out a pretty much unfinished article that hasn't been peer-reviewed and has led to a lot of confusion and panic and annoyance. Let me drop. The problem is that a lot of the stuff, they haven't really told people a lot of things, but the few things that they have let loose is very confusing. I mentioned last week, they showed that they took a object that looks like a copper coin, and they apparently deposited some LK99 on one side of it and showed that a very, very strong magnet would cause it to move about. If you move the magnet, the copper coin would move. The problem is that if you didn't smear a copper coin truly made out of copper with anything and you exposed it to a strong magnet while it was kind of hanging on a string, it would move too. It's called the lens effect, and I have some science toys that kind of demonstrate that principle in my home. So that doesn't show superconductivity, that shows lens effect. You're inducing eddy currents in the copper that are inducing magnetic fields that are interacting with the large magnet. So that's not superconducting. Let me drop for a sec. Then they produced another video. I have a freeze frame of it on my link page, roy.ac2gs.com. that supposedly shows something called the Meissner effect. The Meissner effect is a very interesting quality of type 2 superconductors. What they effectively do is they repel external magnetic fields. But type 2 lets a few of them leak in, and that few that leak in will kind of stabilize a repulsive force and do something that physicists call pinning. So what that effectively means is that if you put a type 2 superconductor on a big magnet, it'll float above it and kind of lock into a bunch of different positions based on the defects in the pinning of the type 2 material. So they tried to show a video of it, except that it didn't quite look like a pinning going on. What it looked a lot like is something slightly different called diamagnetism, which you can buy for about $20 any place. Some material that does this is called pyrolytic carbon. What it effectively does is, whereas paramagnetic material assumes the same magnetic field that the external magnetic field it interacts with, diamagnetic material does the opposite. It opposes the magnetic field. We won't go into the quantum mechanics, but it basically does the same levitation, except it doesn't get pinned in positions. So just by looking at the video, it looks like this stuff is not even Meissner effect. It's just dielectric material. Again, cheap, and it operates in room temperature. I have one on my desk. Anyway, let me drop for a second. So over the past week, they gave enough instructions on how to build this ceramic material that a lot of people have gone out and built it, or at least attempted to build it. And pretty much none of the legitimate sources seem to have a superconductor, and they don't seem to demonstrate any Meissner effect. There was one group that kind of said that this is a diamagnetic semiconductor material, which isn't the same as a superconductor. And there was a theoretical physicist who built a model of the lattice structure, and she said that this is more suggestive of a diamagnetic semiconductor. So unfortunately, although it's been 20 years in the researching, I think these guys didn't come up with a superconductor. Any comments out there? Superconductors are fascinating quantum mechanical objects. They operate purely on a quantum mechanical basis using things called Cooper electron pairs. But it would seem that this is not it. It seems to be a ceramic material that's probably just diamagnetic. But, I don't know if they'll be able to make anything out of it, but the future will tell. And who knows? Maybe I'm wrong and all the guys who built it wrong. The South Koreans, who are the guys who are working on it, said that everyone got the ingredients wrong or put it together wrong. So who knows who's right? Yes, Wesley.
So in regards to the video, that was the original Korean video that you described. And there is a Dave from EEV blog, very much popular YouTube channel, with and he has also the forum, and he's the admin of that forum. And he made a video where actually he stated everything that you said, but in more drastic form of it. Let me show. So actually, my opinion, original video, Korean video, doesn't contain any statements on the or claims. It shows what it shows. So it was Dave who made claims to gain popularity as some sort of science-oriented brain, and video only shows the copper plate that after it was covered with superconductive compound, behave exactly as a copper plate would behave if it was not. So the proof of concept of superconductivity is to be analyzed yet, right or wrong. Now, Dave is an engineer, not trained in physics, scientist. I would say amateur in science. He has an ego problem trying to show himself not only as a guy with soldering guy now. I'm not trying to make a parallel between Dr. Roy and Dave. Both of them are extremely talented. But again, there was no claim on the video. So you cannot attach your criticism into something that doesn't claim anything. Enter XGM.
Wes, AC2GS, by the way, I think you give these guys way too much benefit of the doubt. If you rush out a pre-peer-reviewed article that says we have discovered the Holy Grail, we have discovered a room temperature, normal pressure superconductor. And by the way, let me show you a video of how it interacts with magnets. And then show how a piece of how a copper coin demonstrates a very common lens effect, which doesn't prove or disprove anything. You could have slathered peanut butter on the copper coin, and it would demonstrate the same movements. And then let me put a piece of this on a powerful neodymium magnet and push it around and show that it repels, which is what a diamagnetic does. The suggestion would be that they were showing this repelling as proof that it was the Meissner effect, which I don't believe it is, and which a lot of people who have looked at the video, it's a little more difficult to tell from static shots, because if you've ever seen YouTubes where they actually do that with a superconductor, there are some ceramic superconductors that work at the temperature of liquid nitrogen, so usually it's a bath of liquid nitrogen it sits on, and you can see the pinning. You can see how it kind of moves from point A to point B and then kind of locks into position, and then you shove it and it moves into position C and locks into that position. Whereas if you saw this video of this material, they're just scraping it along the face of the neodymium magnet, and it's just moving along and fluttering up and down. So I think they're trying to infer that these images demonstrate the effect of a superconductor when they don't.
Question, Roy, WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'm looking at the picture now that you have on your website. I'm trying to figure out what the four gold things are. Are they neodymium magnets? And what is the silver thing on the bottom? I don't think it's aluminum foil. What is that? And what is the black thing that's floating above it? And this is all sitting on your desk?
Yeah, you could buy one too. I think it's $25. It usually comes with in a little wooden box. The gold objects are neodymium cube magnets that are positioned north-south, south-north. The black rectangle with the hole in the middle is a material that I mentioned called pyrolytic carbon. It's very similar to graphite, except that graphite has a large number of single-layer carbon atoms kind of sliding on each other. Pyrolytic carbon has some covalent bonds between those sheets of graphene. So this material is very diamagnetic. So it's the diamagnetism of that black object that caused it to be repelled away from the Dionysian cubes. And the thing below it is probably just tinfoil.
And now this thing finds its own center. In other words, if you physically move this around one way or another, it'll find its own center. I'm just surprised it doesn't, like, flip over or something. I'm surprised it's able to stay there. Doesn't it set up its own magnetic field and want to repel it in some way, one way or another. I'm just surprised it stays centered.
Yeah, well, in the case of this configuration, it's sort of pseudo-pinned by, because this isn't a solid magnet underneath it, so it's not, the surface of this magnet is not, say, all north or all south. It's an alternating north-south-north cube. So the way that the magnetic field lines align, it kind of stabilizes the repulsion so it doesn't fall off. And on the little desktop thing, you can slide it across. It just hovers, say, a millimeter above the surface of the magnets. But in the wooden box that it holds, it stays there forever. So it just kind of slides one way and the other. It's a kind of fascinating little thing. And like I said, pyrolytic carbon is relatively inexpensive to manufacture, and it does this diamagnetism at normal temperatures. So it's a cute little demonstration for diamagnetism. Water is diamagnetic also, but much more weakly.
Okay, that's great. Why didn't they have this in my science class when I was a kid? That's wonderful. Very good. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, I've been collecting these little science toy thingies for a long, long time. I have one of those drinking birds sitting on my desk, and a bunch of other little things. When I was doing the 3D printing, occasionally I would bring one or two of them over to the demonstration and just show people off different interesting things. You know, physics can be fun. It's kind of a shame when your physics teacher, say, was not very happy with his job and he presented things rather dryly in high school. I was very fortunate. I really got very lucky with my science teachers. They were engaging and well-informed. Yes, Wesley.
So I understand the whole notion is that there is no levitation, right? So far you don't deny that it might be superconductivity present, but if it doesn't levitate, the magnet doesn't levitate, you could actually have it reverse if you fix magnets. And the copper should levitate. But anyhow, levitation of superconducting material is phenomenon unique to the type 2 superconductor. And flux spinning is entirely unique to the superconductors and is also wholly distinct from Meissner effect. So it is not a property of diamagnets or diamagnetism. I have a quote that I'm going to read to you. Let me jump.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
You made an erroneous comment. The pinning seen in type 2 superconductors is the Meissner effect. So at one point you said it's not the Meissner effect. It is the Meissner effect.
Meissner effect, the expulsion of magnetic flux when the material becomes superconducting in a magnetic field. So if the magnetic field is applied after the material becomes superconducting, the flux cannot penetrate it. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's the Meissner effect. And with type 2 superconductors, it's an imperfect repulsion. So there are some lines of magnetic field that do go through type 2 superconductors, which tend to pin it in positions.
Okay. So if we start to talk about differences between the known art and the art proposed by the Korean scientists, the first what comes to mind is you saying the rush. The rush since 1999, that's what the rush is about. That's what the point that they rush about. anytime they put the notion on the paper and make it public, it's a rush. Am I wrong?
Yes, you are wrong, Wesley. They rushed it. The paper is poorly done and poorly written, and some members of the research group complained. What apparently happened is a subset of the researchers decided to get out in front of the discovery a little prematurely, to say the least. Surprisingly, or not surprisingly, three members, which is the number of maximum number of Nobel Prizes you can get for research. So it was a little glory-seeking from a subset of the research group that the other portion of the research group is less than happy with. So it maybe it took them 23 years, but probably if it really is legit, it may have really needed to take them 24 or 25 years. You know, like the old saying goes, it's ready when it's ready. There's no particular time span where, well, we've worked on this for X number of years. It's either ready now or it never will be ready. If we kind of use that with the space program, it would be a terrible, terrible thing.
Space-time continuum.
Yep, the space-time continuum. We know it well.
Okay, so now I understand what is your point. Okay, so I have a quote from the paper of those scientists. Our results revealed that the parent compound PB10PO460 is an insulator. Why? Cu, which is the copper doping, induces an insulator metal transition and those volume contraction. The bond structures of LK99 around the Fermi level and featured by the half-field flat band and fully occupied by the flat band. Those two flat bands arise from above the two p orbitals of 1/4 occupied oxygen. Oxygen? Okay. Atoms. And they are high BDZ rated on 3D. Okay, anyhow, I'm going to skip it. My question is the known art cruising around ceramic isolators, because it looks like the compound is a ceramic, but is at temperature at the room temperature when it's changing the phase is becoming superconductor. Back to you.
Okay. Ceramics can conduct electricity. We have ferrites that are conductive. Some do, some don't. But there's nothing inherent in calling something a ceramic that it is always an insulator. There are superconductors, legitimate superconductors, that operate below the boiling point above the boiling point of nitrogen. So you could pour liquid nitrogen into a little glass holder and put the ceramic, and it will superconduct. These haven't really been demonstrated to superconduct. They've been demonstrated to go very, very low in resistance, but not, as far as I'm aware, they haven't given any proof that it goes to zero, which would be useful. And you were mentioning the structure. I don't think it's that important to get bogged down. It's basically a lead, oxygen, phosphorus, ceramic where some of the lead atoms have been replaced with copper atoms.
Okay. So my point is that critics are trying to critique non-statement. In other words, I don't see the statement. There is no statement on the video, and I don't see the statement that could be related to that video or visual material that was presented. So if there is no statement, if there is no claim, there is no statement. So we say, most likely, the answer cannot be giving us no. So that might be something there, but you may know don't know for sure. So I think I said it properly. Back to you.
Okay, but, you know, for the sake of absurdity, I might have a super magnet at room temperatures right here. You have no way of disproving it. You can't disprove a negative. You have to prove that it's a superconducting material at room temperature. And the only thing they've presented is data that demonstrates it has low resistance, but not zero. They've put out pictures. I didn't put these pictures out. They put the pictures out of magnets acting on a diamagnetic material. I doubt that they put it out to prove that they have discovered yet another diamagnetic material at room temperature. I assume that the reason for them presenting these odd interactions with magnets was to hopefully give people the idea that this was the effect that a super magnet had on a superconductor had on a strong magnet, which they're not. Again, the first thing with the copper disc, you can do it at home. It's called the lens effect. You can Google the lens effect. You can Wikipedia the lens effect. I have science toys that show the lens effect where a magnet going through a piece of copper tubing travels very slowly because it induces eddy currents which produce opposing magnetic fields in the copper tubing. So that's just a demonstration of lens effect. Has nothing to do with superconducting material. Then they show you diamagnetic effect, which again has nothing to do with superconducting material. So why would a research group who are researching a superconducting material show us lens effect of regular materials and show us a dielectric effect of dielectric material when they're addressing the discovery of a lifetime, a room temperature superconductor?
Interesting. Well, let me put it this way. Because we're dealing with ceramic, so they can only spray or deposit ceramic on the copper plate. And the video only shows the copper plate that after it was covered with superconductive compound behaves exactly as the copper plate would behave if it was not. That's only what we know. The rest of it is just manipulation. That means you think that it says more, I think that it says less. I may say that you have a pink cow in a living room. How do you know that? So, in other words, unless they specify this video says and shows this and everybody says, no, it doesn't, you can make your fantasy to the point at which you analyze another existent statement or non-existent claims. Am I wrong? Enter a sheer.
Yes, Jeff.
Eddie's still on the space-time continuum. Hi. No, I just wanted to quickly, I'm sorry, Wes, I just needed to cut in and make one thing amply clear. In chemistry, of course, we used to make a lot of soluble molecules, individual molecules that float around in solution. And we would do the molecular orbital calculations on them. And it would be very easy to then fill those orbitals with electrons and determine whether something was going to be paramagnetic or diamagnetic. I think the distinction has to be made amply clear that when you're talking about extended solid-state materials, you're working with ion structure, not molecular orbital theory, QSO.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. And as I added, among the many researchers that commented was a lady who's head of some quantum mechanic lab in, I think, Stanford, who did a theoretical modeling of the orbitals and came up with her results, which were not optimistic. But, you know, I mean, look, Wesley, Is it possible that this is really legit? Is it possible it's a really superconducting material? Yeah. Have they given me any reason to think that? No. That's my problem, I guess, and the world's problem. They spent 23 years playing with a ceramic material, and they don't seem to have any material readily available to conclusively suggest what they're claiming. So usually when that tends to be the case, it means that it's a flawed experiment, and they kind of ran a little bit too fast to the glory zone, and it'll all kind of go the way of cold fusion, unfortunately. It would have been great if it was real. It wouldn't have been universally great because, again, we talked about ceramics, and I'm not quite sure what at what magnetic field the superconductor fails to operate, because they tend to have critical magnetic fields that kind of destroy the Cooper pairs and such. I could be totally wrong. I don't think I am.
Oh, at that point, I agree totally with you. Yes. So, I think exactly the same. It might be superconducting, but so far, nothing says that it is superconducting. Back to you.
Well, yeah, except those three guys in South Korea who published the article and are now blaming everyone for getting their ingredients wrong or getting the mixture wrong, and which is incredibly common. If you go through the real messy parts of science where guys get it wrong, invariably the first response is, wait a minute, let me triple check my results. Instead of that, you get the old, well, you just did it wrong, dummy. If you do it right, it'll do all the magic stuff that I sort of wrote down but didn't really.
Okay, so I think we've beaten the subject. Is anybody else? Because I have also something I would like to discuss.
Okay, Wes, we'll go back to the regular scheduled thing. I just thought it would be interesting. I'm very fascinated by supercomputers in general, superconductors, and especially, this was amazing when I first heard about it, superconductor, usually relatively high-temperature superconductors, and we're still talking about a lot of degrees below centigrade, require enormous atmospheric pressures to operate, but something that was described as a room temperature, one atmosphere superconductor would have had dramatic effects on our life. And so I will continue to follow it. If I find interesting material pertaining to it in the future, I'll come back to it. And hopefully I'll be able to tell you that I'm completely wrong and that these guys earned their Nobel Prize and the 21st century is going to get a kick in the pants. But we'll see. Anyone with any comments before we move on to the regularly scheduled stuff?
WB2BX.
Yes, Frank.
I turned on light, so I might have missed something here, but this somehow sounds a bit reminiscent of the flap over room temperature fusion about 35 or 40 years ago. Go ahead.
Well, hopefully not. I was just alluding to it. It was another demonstration where a bunch of people think that they've discovered something and misread or misinterpreted their results and went off and caused a lot of confusion for many years. I was kind of updating people on the present state of the so-called announcement of the room temperature normal pressure superconductor. There have been more than a few scientists out there that have modeled the structure of the ceramic or have tried to reproduce the ceramic and been somewhat disappointed by its results. And I looked further, I think I mentioned last week, that the copper disc and lens effect I noticed immediately last week, but I looked further into the movie of them presupposing a Meissner effect of a small bit of the superconductor being repelled and levitated.